Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Keldabe Talk Radio. I'm not your host, Thaxos, as Biohazard can't join us tonight. And with me, as always, is Crow.
Yo.
Frost.
Sup?
Tobias, our newest addition to the podcast team.
Cheers, mate.
And our special guest for the night, Zugte.
Hello.
Also known as the Bone Princess. Well, since we do have Tobias on here as our newest member, perhaps Tobias should tell us a little bit about himself and introduce himself to the listeners.
Yes, exactly.
Good call.
Tobias is the Alarad of which clan?
The Vetmanda clan.
And where is that located?
Iowa.
Awesome. And you're also on the podcast team, and you are one of our Ori Ramakad Order recipients.
June of 2011.
Cool.
Yeah, I like how you know the month.
I remember that stuff.
If I remember right, you were inducted because of your perseverance with your applications, right?
Yes.
I remember hearing about that. You got turned down, what, like 13, 14 times or something?
Six.
Okay.
Yes.
That's close to 13, 14. Yeah. I mean, it's like half.
That's for my next costume.
What was that?
Trying to do the Force Operations Brigades.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
And speaking of applications, Zugte is our personnel officer.
Yeah.
So she is in charge of... Oh, yeah. If any of you have ever applied, you've probably seen your application photos photoshopped and edited to show you exactly what you need to do. Which is awesome, by the way.
I'm surprised someone actually knows that I do that.
Oh, yes, it's quite well known.
I remember actually hearing about that specifically. Like, I was talking with... I talk to Mandalore pretty frequently. I'm calling him Mandalore so you guys all know him. I know him as an assortment of various epithets and insults. however, he specifically said that one of the reasons they picked you was, A, because you applied... And B, because you went above and beyond the call of duty, and the example that he specifically gave me was the fact that you Photoshop pictures for people so they would know exactly what they needed to do, which is very helpful because it's very helpful.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think you can definitely see, well, I can see at least being on the team that it's down the, yeah, you know, most of the time you just have re-apping once instead of...
Yeah.
Times because that's what we want change, so
yeah. Well, and I mean, that what probably takes you 5-10 minutes maybe to do a decent one.
No, because I'm not trained, so
so that 30 minutes, however, the 30 minutes makes it a lot easier for that person not to spend extra money on doing something and not to get all disappointed and have to persevere such that they can get Ori Ramakad for getting denied 14 times.
Absolutely.
Right, would you have rather had some Photoshop done, Tobias, when you applied?
No.
To help you? No?
No.
No.
I mean, it would have saved me a whole lot of process, but
Well, you did get Ori Ramakad out of it.
The learning experience.
Yeah, I would be just... some guy, if I didn't get the Orang.
Thanks for your service, but I'll decline. Yeah. I could get an Ori Ramakad out of this. That should be a qualifier for Ori Ramakad, most denied person.
Just make that one of the May 4th awards.
Yep.
Oh, God.
I think I would win that every
most
year,
perseverant.
Though.
No, we said it every year. Most perseverant member.
Yeah, person who has to apply the most times.
Yeah, most perseverant does sound better than most denied.
Not a bad. Most denied. Well, then people would be talking about their bar experiences, you know, speed dating.
Or there could be a award called Most Unopposed to Lorad because I did not go through the election process.
There you go. High five, dude.
Well, I'm the only clan leader, too, so I have to. I have three roles that I need to be a part of.
Ah.
Really?
It's a lot of work.
That's the same sort of thing for the regional commander. Nobody ran against me this year.
I think that was the similar for most regional commander positions.
Yeah. I mean, people the first
that was,
year...
That was Canada, too. Before,
and then the next year, people realized that we're largely meaningless, and we do a lot of work for no credit. So,
essentially. But back on the topic.
More like that.
True. All right. So since we have Zookday on, how about you tell us a little bit about the application process and what you do?
The main page. You submit your application. Front, back, sides, weapons, picture or helmet off. And, it takes 3 to 5 days, usually. I mean, we say 7 to 10, but depending on, you know, when everybody's around. Most of the time, we're all on every day, multiple times, so the turnaround's pretty quick. Can't stress, you know, alignment issues. That's one of our biggest issues. I would say 80% of people get knocked back because of simple things, because they think that, you know, that we'll just push them through and we won't.
Right.
And
do you find that most of the time the people that have their work in progress, they're putting up their photos for the alignment issues, that tends to sort it out ahead of time and they go through easier?
Yeah, I think that's a key role, you know, getting, you know, critique from the peers on the boards. I think people need to be a little more patient and wait for that critique to come through than just post my pictures and then, oh, I sent my app already through, you know, I'll have
right.
to wait to see, so...
Yeah, because I do see that you post a lot in the work in progress section, trying to get your trying to give your perspective on it before they get to the approval point. That way, they can get it all fixed.
Yeah, I have my good days and my bad. So, but
now, did you know what you were getting into when you got into this role, or did you like get a hold of PJ, aka Phelan, Auden, Hondo, Carr?
Actually, I didn't, I took it after, Remo, so...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, yeah, I didn't want the position, honestly, but, I was persuaded.
It all comes out now.
Yeah, so I stepped up to the plate and threw my name into the hat, and I was the one selected, so...
And you've been doing a fantastic job of it ever since.
Thank you very much.
Reluctant leaders are some of the best leaders.
So what would you say the ratio of the different eras for applications that we typically get these days?
Oh, definitely modern.
Yeah.
Modern is the, yeah. We very rarely see any other ones. I mean, to this day, I haven't seen another early Crusader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a few that have finished, and I'm waiting patiently to see them. You know,
hopefully soon.
but I would say, Neo Crusader, I think we have, one approved? And then Late Crusader is definitely, you know, it seems to be getting a good push. There's a lot of people seems to like that era.
Yeah, that seems to have definitely picked up. And feel free to out people specifically, what the podcast is for. No.
Name.
But you can name drop if you'd like.
Oh no, that's totally not what we're about, but tell us anyway.
Yeah, we like to make enemies on the podcast.
Yeah, that's our actual goal is to make as many enemies as possible in as short a time as possible.
Yeah, we're not here to Kildob be informative.
Kildob is a Mando for hate us, please.
Yes.
Now I gotta ask this, legit question. When you decide to go early Crusader, yeah, why early Crusader?
I don't know. I guess because I've always liked that kind of barbaric kind of look. I was always a big Conan the Barbarian fan as a kid.
Yeah.
So since you have two kits that you're... Well, you've got one kit that's officially approved, and you got a second kit in the works. Perhaps you should tell us a little bit more about the first kit that you got official with, kind of what inspired it, how that came about.
Beyond
Conan.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's not quite a Conan the Barbarian. There's a little bit more mana to it.
She'd be naked if it was a Conan the Barbarian.
Be a bit Red Sonja-ish.
Scalpel bikini and all that.
Yeah. I guess, you know, when my son, you know, first started watching the Clone Wars and he got really into Star Wars and he likes the bad guys, so he wanted to do a Mandalorian, which brought me to the Mercs. And I just, you know, just started roaming the boards and learning as much as we could. And I stumbled across the Crusader board and I don't know, he just kind of, you know, kind of spoke to me. I just liked it. Plus I liked that nobody had done it and it was kind of that thing people started and nobody finished.
So you're a hipster. Got it.
That break the mold. So it can be done.
Cool. And so I noticed that a lot of your armor is very much bone textured.
Yeah.
How difficult was that to do?
I don't think it was very difficult at all. I mean, it's easier than if you were to do modern armor because, I mean, with modern armor, you got to make everything completely smooth and symmetrical and even, where this is kind of, you just slap it on and sand it down and it's good.
Is that what it says in the CRL? Slap it on, sand it down, and it's good?
Yes.
Good.
You can quote me on that.
Actually, what are you using as your base material? Like, what? Because I'm assuming that you're using Bondo or some other filler on top of it, and then, like, are you just using a paper template and then directly applying Bondo to that, or what?
Yeah, all of my armor pieces are cardboard, and then fiberglass taped, fiberglass, you know, resins, and then Bondoed.
That's
like epoxy putty.
That's exactly how I did my the claw gauntlet on the Frost costume. Is done the exact same way, except I got lazy and didn't do any of the fiberglassing. So it's literally just cardboard with some Bondo on it. Which,
it's amazing it lasted this long, man.
I've made two of them over the course of 5 years, but I mean, like, the fact that this last one has held up since Celebration 5?
Pretty good.
Yeah. I was impressed by the durability of cardboard and Bondo.
Now, Zute, is that
because that's not really CRL compliant anymore.
Uh-oh.
Oh, did they change that?
Yeah, you kind of have to have it fiberglass there.
I mean, I can do that in 5 minutes.
Well, all he needs to do is fiberglass it on the inside anyways, right?
Either that or I can just apply spackle to it and then paint it and say I fiberglassed it.
Spackle? What, like, you use on the wall?
Yeah.
No.
But we would know, because you just told us.
Exactly, but how would you know?
Because just announced it.
Yeah, I was just saying, I can't believe this is being recorded.
I'm making a metal one anyway.
That'll pass.
Yeah.
No shit. Up, edit.
Edit.
But, actually, yeah. So, that's something for your personal mode. Frost is planning on doing a metal version of the Left Hand of Death, so be afraid.
Cool. Is it also going to shoot off the claws?
No, probably not. Well, actually, it's the same claws. So
yes. It may be able to shoot claws again.
Yes, it may. For those of you who aren't aware of this, I don't even know if you are, Ian. I nearly murdered Sean.
Oh, no, I know the story.
I
know the story.
In 2012.
Sarah doesn't know the story, I don't think.
I nearly murdered Sean. No, it wasn't 2012. It was 2011.
I nearly
murdered Sean at Dragon Con 2011.
He tried to murder me.
We were doing things, and for some reason, I think my chain yanked one of my claws off when I was spinning it around.
Yep.
And flew, and very luckily, because they're
pretty pointy.
Yeah, they're pointy. And so it flew and dinged Sean right in his chest plate.
Yep.
And it
luckily,
was
not in my face because I didn't have my helmet on at the time.
I mean, no one would have noticed the difference. It would have just been an extra piercing. But with all those facial piercings you have.
Yeah, with all those dozens of facial piercings I definitely have.
But it was exciting for a minute there.
For you.
Yeah. I actually have gotten new gloves since then, too, and the claws are way too tight to do that anymore.
Excellent. Very reassuring.
I mean, the chain's gone, too. I'm just down to the saber now.
What?
Yeah, don't have the chain anymore. Did you not see the pictures?
Nope.
Nope.
Do you have a whip?
Love that back.
Links.
I don't even do... That's another thing. I don't do whips mostly because I usually do everything in the course of, like, I don't know, 24 hours where I just am awake the entire time.
I learned that I should do whips because that's what caused me to get denied 5 times is because I was not posting anything.
Yeah.
But it got you our Aramacad.
Yeah.
It took a lot of conscious effort for me to put a whip up for the newest gun I made. And even then, that was after the fact. It was already done by the time I posted all the pictures.
Yeah, well, that's how it works for me, too. Like, I remember I did a thing where I posted up several concepts for a gun. Not the most recent one, but a while ago. Posted up some concept pictures for a gun and was asking people, like, what do you think I should do? And I had talked to, like, 3 people whose opinion I actually trusted. And before then, and I had already started working on it, like... I posted that topic up. I stared at the topic for maybe 30 minutes and then went out to the garage and started working on the design. And I come back and there's like 100 votes. And I'm like, ugh. So, Sarah, what's the most common color scheme you see?
$5 says it's black and red.
Actually, I don't think I see it. Black and, you know, I think a lot of people think it's black and red, but I...
There was a
it
time.
Probably used to be black and red,
yeah.
And people just have assumed that it still is, even though it's...
Yeah, I think because everybody, you know, anybody that wants to do black and red and post it, everybody's like, no, don't do black and red.
We already have enough of those.
So, yeah. It's like a rainbow every day.
So rainbow is the most common, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically. Everything.
So that's what somebody should do now, is do the actual rainbow Mando, please.
We don't have one yet?
Yeah, we have a couple of those color change paint people.
That's true. We also have a straight up pink Fett.
Well, that's different. Yes. That's pink. Yeah. That's still pretty monochromatic overall.
It is pretty, yes, Ian.
Well, yeah, it is pretty. I'll admit that. Man looks good.
And he does. So for the aspiring female Mandos out there, do you have any tips, tricks, and recommendations for them?
Go to the female boards and post a work in progress.
Yep.
That's a good start.
That it definitely is.
I mean, you know, I think it's good to be a girl. I mean, there's lots of customization that, you know, the guys don't get really, you know, because kind of like...
We're not cool enough.
No.
Like his wife, you know, she had the blue ribbon diamond and, you know, all the crazy things that we get to do. There's so many different chest plate styles and...
Yeah, that's definitely one element. I have noticed that a lot of the female armor tends to diverge a fair bit more, and so that you get a lot more unique styles.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Yeah, that's one thing I do like to see about the female armor, is like, I mean, the male styles we pretty much hammered out into like 4 or 5 main, you know, general patterns, and then everybody just tweaks off of that. Female armor, we keep having new ones made up, like, the plates that my wife, Ark, uses, those were actually made by, one of Wampa's prospective members just at an armor party. She just showed up and said, hey, what would this work? And we bonded up, like, a cardboard, you know, dummy of her design, and it, like, worked great. Just came out of nowhere.
Awesome. Yep, I like those. Those are really cool, the angled plates.
Mm.
That's kind of dub them.
Well, that's something we see a lot of different designs for, is the chest armor itself. Is there any, what's your personal preference when it comes to the chest armor for females?
My personal preference?
Yeah, like, which ones do you think look good? Which ones do you think are kind of...
Add your voice to the hotly debated topic.
Are a bit on the extreme side, because...
You know, I don't think I would pick any one, because, you know, with everybody being different shapes and sizes, you know... There's going to be something that's going to look the best on any one person, you know? It's kind of finding what looks good, the best with your body type, you know? And going with that and running with it. I mean, that's what, you know, with my armor, you know, there's a lot of things that I do, tips and tricks, you know, that, you know. I don't know. I mean, I'm a bigger girl, so there's things like with my flight suit being darker and my plates being lighter and some of them being smaller, so it makes me look smaller than I am. I mean, I have a lot of people that when I'm out of kit, they go, oh, you look shorter than you are in costume. I really think that means that I'm bigger. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do, you know, to like they on the boards, you know, the tips and tricks if you're a bigger person or a smaller person, you know, to give that illusion that, I don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Here's a question. Do you prefer people, now this could go in either way with women or guys with long hair. Do you like seeing the long hair decorated or long hair in general, or do you think you should hide the hair?
Personally, I don't care. I mean, I think it, like, again, it goes with, it's like the one, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, the Beastmaster guy who Blackbird. Wears it. Yes. Yes, he wears it all down. I mean, it goes with his look. It looks good. I like it, you know? I mean, and I dread my hair for under my helmet. So, I mean, I think sometimes it plays off the character and it brings the character more to life and goes that step beyond sometimes. I mean, I don't mind it with females. I don't think anybody on the team has ever said, you know, put your hair up. We don't like
put
it.
Put your hair up.
You said not screen accurate. That's all I had to.
You're a girl. That's one of the things, you know.
Your hair's not screen accurate.
Yeah, that's something that I run into pretty bad, because I've got pretty long hair. Half the time, it just sort of ends up out of the helmet. So I just sort of stop dealing with it.
Yeah. Cord, for those of you, that's Chaos Veed, has the most amazing, luscious locks of beautiful hair.
And he's also like 17 feet tall, so.
Yeah, he's 17... He's 17, 22 foot, 37 foot, 12. He's enormous.
Yeah.
He makes me look short, and I make other people look short, thus. He has luscious locks, and his strategy is actually, he's a chef, so he nets his hair. He puts it into
a hair net.
and then bandanas it up.
Well, there you go.
So it doubles as padding, too, for him.
I gotta try that.
In his helmet.
Yep. So there you go. Ina, do that for me.
I will. I have a hairnet.
There you go.
You learn stuff new every day.
Indeed.
Yep.
From Frost, no less. Who the hell knew?
Believe it or not, as a fountain of useless knowledge, I do also have some less useless knowledge.
Is there anything else, Sarah, you can think of that you want to chime in on, or bring to attention while we got you on your little soapbox? Stuff that you want to yell at people?
Yes. When you take your app pictures, do it with a neutral background. Please, we don't want to see your garage or your kitchen or your messy bedroom. It's very distracting. It really drives me crazy, especially when I have to Photoshop and I'm trying to, like, fix stuff and I've got to add all your junk into it. Just add.
My pictures that I got approved with, it's in my family room, and my mom decorated it with, like, red, white, and blue, but there's a little, like, man standing on my shoulder. I think it was the greatest thing ever.
I actually, in some of my pictures, I think my pre-Dragon Con 2008 pictures I posted. And I don't know, you might remember these, Moose, because this is before everybody else's time. I had a picture taken, and it was just in my house because I was just taking a picture of what some of the parts of the costume looked like. I was wearing it from, like, the waist up, and I was behind a countertop, so you couldn't see the rest of it. But my dog had become interested and was sort of poking his head out to look at me.
Yeah,
he had this worried
that.
Look on his face. And people were posting, "You're scaring your dog." Stuff like that. So that became the primary feature of the picture that people talked about rather than, you know, the costume.
Yeah.
Well,
and here's one for just posting whip photos. Put some shoes or socks on. I see so many bare feet.
I would rather see bare feet than people's socks. Like,
yeah, like shoes.
Bare feet, I'm
wear
okay
shoes.
With. You see, like, we see a lot of just socks. Some dude walking around in his socks with a gun sitting next to him.
I don't see that many socks. I see a lot of feet. A lot of Boba Feets.
And if you can, just set down whatever it is you're working on just, like, a kitchen table or something, or a countertop. because it'll give us almost all countertops and kitchen tables are a flat color. Now she's got like one that's like boomerang pattern or something. Don't do that. That'd be awful. Go away. But if it's, you know, like a granite top or a mica top or something, take your pictures of your gear there because it will give us all a much flatter background to look at.
Yeah. And also, while we're on the topic of taking photos, lighting is very key. Have the sun or the light source behind the camera person shining onto your armor so we can see all the details.
Yes.
Because if the light's behind you, you can't make out anything.
Makes a good dramatic photo, terrible app photo.
Yeah. Terrible whip photo as well, because then people can't give you the proper critique, because now they have to guess, is that in the right place, or is that just a shadow?
And it also, it makes you inclined to lie to yourself. That's an important thing, is that when you take photos and you look less good than you think you were going to look, that's going to be true in all the photos you ever take of your costume. Like, you have to make sure that when you see a photo and you realize, oh man, I was slooping, or I was stooping my shoulders and doing all that stuff, it looks really bad. Make sure to remember every single time that you're in costume not to do that. Because that you'll think that it's something that's only going to happen in the one picture, and you'll make excuses to yourself, and it'll just make your pictures look bad, and then you'll feel bad about your costume.
And then after the convention where you realize every picture has you slouching,
yeah,
then you have a problem because you can't find any nice photos. So
that happened to me.
I'm still trying to learn that. I have a terrible time with my stance in costume.
Well, that happened to me at Con Carolinas this year. I was slouching a lot because I was dead tired.
If you have bad posture to start with, then yeah, it's going to be a problem. But you can work with it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, personally, I find that when I put on the armor, you do tend to, and I'm pretty sure this stands for most people, you do tend to take on a bit of a different persona when you're in the armor as opposed to out. So just make that part of your persona, is standing upright, put your feet at a bit of a wider stance, a bit of more of an aggressive stance. You look more of a awesome bounty hunter here that's going to kick some butt.
I put on my Man of War and Titty Sauce playlist, so I take on a different persona, too.
Your what playlist?
Manowar and Tootie Sauce.
Ah.
It's a bunch of metal bands.
Yeah, I think we heard the same thing there, Tom.
Your edit sauce?
And I would say that something that has helped me was that if you have problems with those stance things, find somebody who's good at, like, posing for pictures. Like, I had Darian Ordeaux at Planet Comic Con teaching me ways I could look better in pictures and ways I could pose to make it look more aggressive and more Mandalorian style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or look at the classic photos of Boba Fett, Jango Fett, all of their action poses. You know,
the action poses are key there, by the way, guys, because a lot of the pictures of Boba Fett that exist, Jeremy is standing rather passively. If he's the person even wearing the armor in those pictures, some of them aren't Jeremy even.
Yeah.
But that has to do with the way his armor looks and the way he moves in his armor. He's able to pull that off, and people are very familiar with how Boba Fett moves very slowly and deliberately. It's very Clint Eastwood, and people like that. However, you're painted to look like fire and are carting around a minigun. So doing the sort of pose that Jeremy does where he holds the gun in one arm and he's sort of looking off to the side sort of quizzically, that's not going to work with you and your fire and minigun. You're going to need to find something that works for your costume. And the only way to do that is to wear it and take pictures of it. And then to look at them.
One key thing definitely is to try and get the, and this can be done if you got a friend who's a photographer, just snap some photos or even just pose it in the mirror. Don't half shebs your holding out of the guns, because when you hold out a gun and your arm is not quite straight, it just looks bad.
Yeah, and if you get tired, well, like, because especially if you're in a group and, you know, people at a convention just keep coming up and taking pictures of you, it's just sort of a rotating door of photographers. Change your stance up; they'll take a second picture.
Yep, and additionally, have more than one pose. I actually do have more than one pose. I am renowned for one in particular. however, you should always, and there are a lot of pictures of me where I'm with a bunch of mercs where I'm not doing that pose, because I almost always start with that pose and then transition into other ones. And that's what you gotta do, because sometimes you just, you can't hold that pose for too long. Or it gets boring.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that means that you can't just have the one pose that looks good. You gotta have at least three, would be my suggestion.
Three's good.
Three to four will be good for a convention, and then of course as you get more familiar with it, you can expand and add more, and then just start varying it.
Yeah. Additionally, for people who do the Dragon Con parade, or any parade really, you need to come up with a walking pose and a full set of walking poses.
Yep.
Which is one of the reasons why I almost always wear my Sado costume in the parade. Is because he has very good moving poses, because he's got swords.
High-fiving the kids along the parade does count as a pose.
Yes, it does.
People will take pictures of that, and they'll be like, oh, that's so awesome. But you need to have poses for walking around. Like, Sugtai has one where she's got her axe and her gun out, and she looks all menacing, and she looks like she's about to, like, shoot somebody in the face and then smack another person in the face with the axe. It's a very good one. But there are a lot of people who just kind of march and are like, oh my god, it's so hot in here. Why did I do this? And the answer is, it doesn't matter why you did it. Look awesome.
Yep.
I have a very limited number of poses, though. Because I have a very limited mobility in my costume.
But you've got at least three or four, right?
Well,
I have.
There you go. So we've got Rizalor training that just recently started. Perhaps you could just kind of outline the process for people that aren't clan officers, don't really know what's going on.
It's basically, you know, Hondo, PJ, Fallon, whatever you want to call him, he basically set it up to begin with so the Rizalors could get a first-hand view of exactly what the approval process is and what's going to ding, you know, applicants of their clan, and so they can take all that information back and better help people get their costumes approved and guide them through the process of making their kits. So they get to spend a month with us and see us discuss and why we make the decisions we do, and
right,
go back with more knowledge to pass on to the rest of the forum.
Yeah. And I remember when I had to do it, it was quite insightful, because you could see exactly, you know, what the app team process was in terms of, you know, examining the armor, figuring out, you know, is this alignment proper with this, that, and the other thing. And oftentimes you'd see, you know, not necessarily every app team member agrees on everything, but in the end they reach consensus that is always typically the best decision.
Now, you basically just observe them. You don't have really any say on what's going on.
You're not suddenly part of the app team in determining.
Okay.
No, yeah, but we want you to ask questions. You know, we have a process where you quote the picture, you bring it into, we have each class has its own board where you can discuss it and ask the questions. And we want you basically to perform just like you would be an app team member. Wants you to see if you can pick out all of the issues, you know, if there are any, mm-hmm. you know. So that's what we ask everybody to do, you know. Of course, everybody, you know, gets on and, you know, they want to be the first one to pick everything out, so.
I think it's definitely made a big difference in the way that we see. I see a lot of work in progresses that the clan Rizalor will come in, kind of make a comment and point out something that perhaps was missed, and definitely saves them time in the long run and you know, skips a portion of the approval process where they would otherwise get rejected, or not rejected, but, you know, get the app denied and sent back with some improvements to be made, and therefore it shortens up the period in which it takes to get approved.
Yeah, I think it's helped me out a lot, because I happen to be a clan Rizalor, so I personally feel better about chiming in on people's whips, just saying, yeah, that I've seen evidence that won't work, you know, or yes, this will work just fine, or tweak this a bit. It just, from the standpoint of the person going through the training, it does help a little bit.
I'm also glad that you are including non-Rusalors in it, because when PJ did his classes, he's like, oh, this is Rusalor only, because I actually asked to be a part of it, and I'm an Alorad, so I got denied, and here I am without a Valor or a Rusalor, and it's like, well, I really want the training.
Yeah, well, as long as, you know, if the clan doesn't have a Rizalor, then it goes automatically to the Alor. they can pass it on to their second if they want. But I have had a lot of members, other clan members, that want to be part of it too. And I wish, you know, I could let everybody be part of it. But it's just, you know, already with just the Rooslores alone, it's going to take a year.
Yeah.
To go through the process. So, I mean, I would love to have everybody else join into it. But really, it's, you know, we're trying to give the Rooslores the knowledge they need so they can, you know, perform their position the way it should be, you know, because basically they can make the two above them sit out of a troop if they have to, if they're not up to CRL standards. And we don't want either the Allurid or, you know, the Verilor to step in over them, you know, because that's their position and they need to be able to perform it properly.
Now, at one point, we did actually have the Rooslore training for regional commanders, and that's how I ended up getting my Rooslore training, per se, as I would never was one to begin with. And that definitely is also a beneficial aspect, since the regional commanders are there to help out everybody in their respective region. But for those areas that don't have a clan, if you're looking to join up in a freelancers area, the freelancers guildmaster, he's had Rooslore training. If it's just an area in one of the regions where the regional commander can chime in, you know, they also have more knowledge regarding that. So keep an eye out for that.
Basically, that there's lots of people you can ask, right?
Yeah.
There's always that'll help you. You just got to ask the question.
And definitely on the work in progress, is keep in mind who's got the official member badge and those that are just saying, hey, that looks cool. If they, if they've not gone through the approval process, maybe take their comments with a grain of salt, too.
And also wait for people to chime in.
Yeah, and you know, not to say that someone that isn't an official member doesn't know what they're talking about, but, you know, it is sometimes harder to hear the critiques as opposed to the praise, and you may want to go, oh, well, this guy doesn't know what they're talking about, I'm just going to listen to the other people saying, oh, yeah, looking good. But in reality, people aren't going and criticizing for the sake of criticizing. They're trying to help you improve and help you avoid having your application, kicked back and having to make more changes. Because it's always easier to make the changes as you're building it as opposed to having it finished and then going, shoot, now I have to change this. And then you might have to replace an entire piece and start from scratch on that. All right, okay. And now we're going to take a look at the question portion of the podcast, where we have asked if any of our listeners have questions over on our Facebook pages, both the Mercs page and the Killed All Bay Talk Radio fan page. So, we do have one question from Nathan, and he asks, when it comes to weathering and paint, how much does the AV team look at the kit? Does a pristine kit lose points to one that looks like it's been through hell?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, we basically want a consistent look. So if you're going to weather it, we want it all weathered. You know, we don't want clean pieces, then they stand out. So, you know, or a clean kit and one piece that's completely weathered to hell. It just doesn't cohesively fit.
Right.
So, no, I wouldn't say. I mean, you're not going to lose points over it. I mean, we may ask you, you know, you may need to weather this piece a little bit more, but usually it's more of a suggestion. It's not going to ding you over your purple.
Okay. Because especially lately, I've been seeing that a lot on people's whip threads. It's like, oh, you're not weathered enough. You're not weathered enough. It's like, well, he hasn't drooped in it yet. Like, my weathering is just from trooping.
Right. And that's a common misconception. A lot of people think that will ding you, and it won't. It's, you know, weathering is a personal thing.
That should be done by everyone, in my opinion. But I am slightly biased towards weathering, in case you haven't seen my armor.
Yeah, some people look a little polka dotty, so.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely need the various levels, where it's the larger chunks of paint missing, and then the smaller scrapes and scratches and the rubbing of and wearing away of paint on the edges.
Yeah. If it takes you a while to do it, you're usually probably doing it right, because it gives it the depth and detail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like the weathering a little bit more, because it just adds that little bit extra character to the kit. You know, having the grime and the dirt and the worn down areas and the cracked up paint and all that fun stuff.
Exactly.
And, make sure the soft parts are also weathered.
That is key. That's something people forget.
It really doesn't take much on, like, your flight suit or whatnot, but, like, if you have a cape or a comma or you're wearing a loincloth and your armor's all dinged up, you know, do some tears a little bit, you know, get some grime on there.
do something.
Light it on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You just got to make sure what material you're trying to light on fire. No, seriously, because my cape, I tried to weather by lighting on fire. That did not work too well. I don't know what the material is. I just went in and bought like the cheapest brown fabric that you could find.
Buy like children's like flame retardant pajamas.
I think so, because it's a little bit of stretch, and it really does not like to burn. Oh well, sort of. It doesn't like to char and actually burn away. Mm-hmm. It has a great flame though. If you ever want a long-lasting fire with massive flames with little to no material burning away, my cape is the thing. Disclaimer, please do not light my cape on fire at a convention.
Yeah.
I weathered my cape first. I used like brown and some black spray paint, you know, misted it on there. Then I decided, now I'm going to light it on fire. And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm going to just burst in the flames because I don't know paint and fire mix. So I was like, I'm just going to hold off on that and not do that.
Yeah, if you do plan on lighting your cape on fire to do weathering, please make sure it's A, outdoors, not near anything that can catch on fire, nothing overhead, and make sure you have a large bucket of water around. And you don't need to set the whole thing on fire to get the intended effect. You can burn a very small portion at a time.
Yeah.
And, take your time with it.
Do it with someone near you, preferably.
Get someone with a hose that can just wait there, ready to hose it down if need be.
Yeah.
Mine ended up having, I think, like 1 foot tall flames, and it barely burned away. And then when it did char, it would char, but around the charring where it wasn't actually black, it was just pink. So the cape went brown to pink, and that material would just kind of pull away. So after about 5-10 minutes at the first event, all of the blackened section had gone away, and it was just left with kind of like a faded pink edge, which looked terrible. Absolutely terrible. So, if anything, take some extra scrap material and test out your weathering on that before you go ahead and light your cape on fire or anything like that.
Another way to weather is, like, what I did was slide my armor plates across the concrete.
Yep. Yeah, I forget who it was. I believe it was one of the Australian members that we had on here. When we discussed weathering with them, he just stuck his helmet out in his driveway and threw rocks at it. Great paint scrapes.
Yep. Oftentimes, real weathering is best weathering.
Got a little too excited with my hand plate, and I threw it instead of slit it, and it went to three pieces. I about cried.
Oops. All right, and next up we have Niabi from the UK for Vok Cheeklan joining us on the podcast. Hello, Niabi.
Hiya, London calling.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Excellent, glad to hear it. So you recently attended Celebration Europe, which happened over in Mess Essen, Germany, if I'm pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, it was, I believe. I think that's how it's pronounced.
I thought you were about to say, which was held in Europe. For a minute there.
Well, it is.
It's not a lie, but it's a little bit redundant.
I'm not wrong.
No, Germany is definitely in Europe.
So we were hoping maybe you could tell us a bit more about that, since I don't recall if anyone from North America made it on over to Celebration Europe, as far as the Mercs go.
We did have some Americans, but they're based in Jangalaya Clan at the moment, because they're US troops.
Ah, okay, yes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Celebration Europe, for me it started at 3 a.m. when a car pulled up outside my house with a Hannon carbonite on the roof. we smuggled them out of the UK and into France and then through Belgium and into Germany. We had to avoid Holland due to their gun regulations, which was didn't really want to spend much time in prison.
Right.
Although I do believe that there were some members who made the run at midnight across the country.
Cool.
Right. What happened?
Yes. Do tell.
Well, over the 3 days of the event, we did a raffle each day.
Mm-hmm.
Where you'd win a helmet or a Gentle Giant model, some Legos, or some Her Universe T-shirts, and we managed to raise over the 3 days He raised €1,703.
Wow, that's awesome.
It was really awesome, which was donated to the Orange Gunner, who was at the event.
Yes, that guy is at a lot of events and doing a fantastic job raising money for charity.
Yeah, he was raising money for a children's hospice in Germany who look after terminally ill children.
Awesome.
And he was totally blown away when we gave him the money. I believe I saw on his Facebook today that he's actually planning on giving the money to help buy a wheelchair.
Okay, nice.
Which was pretty awesome.
Definitely.
Which played the awesome, played a rather big role at Celebration. So if I dropped the A-bomb a few times.
So the Orange Gunner ended up raising how much money in total? Because I think I'd heard a quite a large sum had managed to be raised by him.
I haven't heard how much he raised in total.
Okay. We will have our gophers research that, and by that I mean I'll go search that now. Well, that sounds like an awesome time. So did you need any paperwork for Han there in the Carbonite? Or does he not count as a person when he's frozen in Carbonite?
Well, no, that's one of the things that actually amused us, was because we had him wrapped in a black bag, which was it was tight. You could see his face in his hand. And nobody questioned it at all. It's really, the way to smuggle illegal immigrants in and out of the country is just stick them on the roof. Oh, it's just a hand in Carbonite.
Seems legit.
Which was... Yeah, we were expecting to at least get stopped once by customs to say, "What's that on your roof?" But no, just through, come through.
Like, oh, sweet, I loved Empire. Excellent. No, pass through. Right on.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Also at the event, on the Saturday, we had three members of the Mercs were prejudged for the costume competition.
Yeah,
which was pretty cool. It was Remo, Nairu, and myself.
Awesome.
It was a lot of fun, big power trip. Like, no, your costume's rubbish. No, your costume's excellent.
And that must have been quite the interesting event to participate in.
It was. It was really awesome. Awesome.
So, how did you approach Celebration Europe, or did they approach you for that?
They approached the Mercs asking for volunteers.
Oh, okay.
And there were the three Mercs, and we had one member from the 501st.
Right.
UKG, who was also one of the other prejudges. We split up into two teams. I was with Remo, and then we were given different categories to judge.
Oh, cool. What were the categories?
I was judging from Remo, I should say. We were judging Jedi and droids, creatures, and Outer Rim.
Ah,
which
very cool.
Was pretty cool. We actually, the Mercs had some success in the competition.
Yeah.
With Talos Knot.
I hope so, with us on the judges.
As long as there's no bias.
Oh, no. It was Talos Knot. He came third in the armored category.
Awesome.
It was pretty awesome. We did actually, one of our other members did actually come first in the Jedi category, but obviously in her Jedi costume and not her Mando.
Right.
Which was pretty awesome. I actually went back in the afternoon to help out with the actual backstage of the show, which was an interesting perspective to see it from.
I bet.
Yeah, it was a...
Behind the scenes always is more interesting in terms of how they do everything and get everything done.
Yeah, it was that was pretty awesome! What else happened, let me think? On Sunday we had our Mercs meal, which Jeremy Amorin joined us for.
Excellent.
We had a nice Bavarian buffet, which was...
That sounds good.
It was really good. The food was excellent. It was top-notch food. Jeremy was a true gent and went around all the tables speaking to everybody. Yeah, then gave a short talk, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Sadly, they had to leave a little bit early because they were getting up early the next day to travel back to the UK.
Right.
So after they left, myself and Saz gave some short speeches, and during them, the cry of Oya was often done.
And towards, as is tradition.
As is tradition. And towards the end, one of our cries of Oya was so loud that it actually made someone drop their beer who was outside of the restaurants. So clearly the European clans, when we get together, we're pretty dangerous and people fear us.
That is truly awesome.
It was very, very awesome. Yeah, we also had this sneaky Canadian invader.
What?
Yeah, I don't know where he came from. He just turned up and he started photobombing left, right, and center. Yeah, last I heard, he was actually still in Germany.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not sure if you heard much about him.
No, I didn't hear anything about that at all.
No.
I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah. All right, for those of you that don't know, he's talking about Thaxos, his, or my, his, however you want to view it. My head apparently made its way over to Celebration Europe and ended up in a couple photos.
Just one or two.
Yeah, just one or two. Which, those of you that have maybe already noticed over in the on the boards in the lounge section, we have a Thaxos watch thread, which is basically all the sightings and places where people are uploading the photos from the various sightings of Thaxos. And yeah, so apparently I'm not done traveling quite yet. You heard it here first.
Yep, but last I heard you were going to be touring Europe.
Ooh, very cool. I've never been to Europe, so I think it's great that I get to tour it, even though I'm not even there. should be interesting, that's for sure.
I only actually found out on the very last day, just as we were about to leave, that you weren't actually coming back to England.
Someone absconded with me? Is that what happened?
Someone said, no, we're keeping him. Oh, okay. We'll pass him around Europe, and then eventually...
Eventually I'll make it back to the UK.
I've got some coming plans for when you do.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, maybe a little trip up to London, see the sights.
Cool.
We had a pretty awesome bunker area.
I saw some of the photos. That looked fantastic.
Yeah, the setup for that went up really well. It was pretty much Jangalai did the whole thing. And I stood around going, yeah, looking good, guys.
Yeah, I heard there was a little dispute over where the Han and Carbonite should be placed, though.
Well, we don't like to mention that too much, but there was a small disagreement between myself and Saz, which involved a chair.
There's a video floating around on Facebook, if you can find it.
Yeah, I believe it's in the CE2 Aftermath thread, for those of you who are interested.
Yeah.
Just came across it myself.
I don't know how it got on there at all. For me, I was as European commander, I was extremely proud of all the members and how well everybody bonded together. When we all arrived, we were pretty much 30 strangers who are from 4 different clans. And when we left, we were one family. And all the clans were talking about working together, meeting up again in the future. Hopefully, we're all going to get together at Paris Comic Con in 2014, which the Origalar have managed to arrange for the Mercs to work with the French garrison of the 501st. To get a nice big area together.
Very cool.
Yeah, pretty awesome!
That does indeed sound awesome. So I guess I should see if I can't get the rest of me on over to Paris next year, eh?
That would be pretty awesome.
And anyone else that wants to go over, didn't manage to make it out for Celebration Europe? Paris, apparently, is the place to be next year.
I'm looking forward to it. And then hopefully in 2015, well, you never know.
Yeah, 2015, Celebration 7.
The last That's I heard, there was going to be a European invasion, I think, in the US.
Yeah, that would be cool. Definitely need another European invasion. So that was one of the many things, I guess, announced at Celebration Europe, the location of Celebration 7 over in Anaheim, California.
Yes, we had some spies in the audience for that. We were sitting there with phones at the ready. To text us so we could forward on the information to our beloved Mandalore.
Awesome.
Who was going to post it up. Yeah, sadly, I didn't actually get to go to any panels.
It's Celebration has so much stuff going on. It's
yeah, I did want to go. There was a preview of Rebels, which I was really keen to go and see, but unfortunately, it clashed with our fan panel.
Right.
As I was doing that. I did consider just going, sorry guys, gonna go see Rebels instead. Yeah, I don't think it would have forgiven me for that.
Your sacrifice is appreciated.
The fan panel went really well as well, which was really nice. And we had lots of questions, and I do believe we've had some new members from it as well.
Yeah, I've already started seeing a whole bunch of new people from Europe, identifying themselves over in the identify yourself section of the boards, as it is so aptly named. yeah, so that said, among the other things announced at Celebration Europe, beyond Celebration 7, which I believe is set to be April 16th through 18th in 2015. And among other things, they announced, as Niobe mentioned, Star Wars Rebels, which, if I recall correctly, should begin airing on Disney XD channel starting in the fall of 2014. What else did we hear? I believe they also announced John Williams would be coming back to score the music for Episode 7 as well.
Yes, yeah, that was made official. Though I do wonder why it was really even necessary to announce that. I mean, it's really sort of a given.
you would hope it's a given.
Well, I mean, as thrilled as I am to know that it is a definite and that he'll be back to work his magic on the new films, but... I figured it was just sort of a package deal. You get Star Wars, you get John Williams.
Well, you can't really go wrong there. Yeah. So Star Wars Rebels. Yeah. What exactly did they announce about that? I didn't see too much in the way of what they're doing with regards to the story. I don't know if you heard anything.
No, I didn't hear anything about that. Sadly. I don't think any of the Mercs actually managed to make it.
Okay.
Only because the guys who weren't at the fan panel were manning the booth. And looking awesome.
Well, yes.
As always. There was one panel which was we're talking kind of like behind the scenes of Clone Wars. And I believe Dave Filoni released some information about some Satine armor that she was going to have.
Ooh. If only it continued.
If only it continued. I believe somebody has some photos. At least I saw some at the event. And I went, look at these photos. I'm like, what's that? That's Satine's armor. I was like, she didn't have armor. but she was going to. Like, oh, okay.
I'm sure that'll surface on the internet somewhere.
Yeah, they look pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I believe it was Dave Filoni and at the Star Wars Rebels panel. And the panel itself was hosted by Warwick Davis. Filoni mentioned detail and style. Edit. At the panel, Filoni spoke in detail about the style and art direction for Star Wars Rebels and made it clear that they're going back to the artistic roots of Star Wars and the original Ralph McQuarrie concept art and sketches. I think that should be pretty interesting to see.
Definitely.
The visual styling. In addition, I believe Filoni also mentioned that Star Wars Rebel stories will be told in order, so there will no longer be any guessing, as was a bit of a problem with the Clone Wars series, is that the episodes weren't necessarily all in order.
They're not?
Nope.
That's what I was thinking. I didn't realize that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I suppose some things make sense now.
Yeah, with the Clone Wars, they did kind of jump around in telling the story, whereas Rebels, I think, is going to be one continuous story all in order then, which should help a little bit with comprehension, I think.
Yes.
Because for me, I Clone Wars, as much as we've talked about it already, and I don't want to get too much in that, but with the Clone Wars stuff, especially when they jumped to certain story arcs that didn't really have too much interaction with the other arcs, it was kind of like, okay, this is here, but where in the Clone Wars does this actually take place? I'm sure the historians of Star Wars will be a bit more happy to hear that. One thing I thought was really cool hearing from Celebration Europe, though, was that Kathleen Kennedy, the Lucasfilm president, discussed that they would have a mix of real locations and real models, along with digital effects, for the new Celebration or Episode 7. All these different titles with the words with the number 7 in them are getting really confusing. That's probably why they've tried to call it just Celebration Anaheim instead of Celebration 7. But I'm gonna keep calling it that. I think it's really cool though that they're gonna have more actual prop and set builds in the new movie, give it a bit more of a realistic feel.
Yeah, that does sound pretty good. There was one other thing that we had. We had Mary Franklin, the head of fan relations from Lucasfilm. She came down to our booth on the very last day. And while she was there, we presented her a Night Owl helmet that Saz had made and painted up for her.
Awesome.
And she was pretty pleased with it. Saz managed to find out what was her favorite color.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not quite sure how he managed to do that.
But, that's very cool.
She was pretty happy. There are photos of that on online somewhere.
Somewhere out there on the net.
Somewhere. Just on the internet.
Well, that's very cool. Maybe we'll see her in a full set of armor at some point then.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome. Just, you guys should get Jeremy to give her a nudge in the right direction. He's got his full set of armor. He's an official member.
He was actually doing an event just before Celebration.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he's in launching the Boba Fett Black series in a London store, I believe it was. Sadly, I couldn't get the day off work to go.
Oh, man. I'm so jealous of you guys, the fact that you got Boba Fett actually over there trooping in his gear every now and then.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I saw the photos from it, but yeah, none of the mercs made it, which was sad. But
well, you guys have trooped with him before, though, right?
No.
No?
No, no. He's only ever been in armor twice, I believe.
Oh, okay.
We keep trying to arrange it with him, but he's kind of a bit crazy busy.
That's understandable, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Now we're at conventions he goes to. He's probably not in the UK all that often, really.
No, I do know that he's actually got the next 4 weeks off. So when I was chatting to him at the meal, he said he's got the next 4 weeks off and he's going to relax, see the grandkids, take them up to the Tower of London.
Awesome.
Which was pretty awesome.
Well, maybe once he's back from that, you guys can troop it up with him.
Yep, we are trying.
Well, when you do, I will be completely jealous because that is too cool.
Yeah, that would be truly awesome.
So I hear that Celebration Europe had more than 20,000 fans descend on as in Germany for the convention itself. Sounds like it was pretty packed.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that many. Yeah, it was. It was pretty packed. There was the fan area. I would have said was one of the most busiest actually. All the fan groups were in their own separate hall.
Right.
Which was a little odd because you kind of had to. All the stalls were, and guests were, you had to go out of there, cross this little path, and then you were into the fan hall. And as you entered, there was the smell of costuming, shall we say.
Yeah, that happens.
Which kind of sparked some frivolity regarding maybe he's born with it, maybe it's costuming.
So that's where that line came from.
Yep, that was a discussion one night in a German-Mexican restaurant, which was a very interesting combination.
That does sound like quite the interesting combination.
But yeah, it was getting away from our booth was quite difficult. You go, oh, I'm going to go get some lunch now. Walk off, and sort of hour later, you manage to fight your way back to the crowds. I'm back, guys.
Yeah, that sounds like Celebration, all right. Just for the listeners out there, to put Celebration Europe in perspective, the attendance was approximately 35,000 for Celebration 6. So to have more than 20,000 people at Celebration Europe, that's quite the turnout.
Wow, I didn't know the numbers. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Do you know approximately how many mercs were in attendance?
I believe there were 30 mercs, which, as far as I know, was the biggest attendance in any European events. Most of the clans had most of their members there. I think
that's quite the turnout.
Yeah, it was a. When we were walking through the convention center, going for our group shots, it was a pretty awesome feeling. We were all trooping along in sort of marching style. People parking away.
Yeah, you can definitely get places if you keep the group going, but if you get stuck, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, it was quite good as we were walking past the Norwich Star Wars Society. They gave us a big cheer as we walked by, which was pretty awesome.
That it is, yeah. Sounds like a fantastic time.
It was indeed. Of course, when we came back, there was the announcement put up by Saz that there were three special Order of the Oiramic Heads for services rendered at Celebration Europe.
That's true.
There was one for Rusan Ordo for her awesome work and everything she did. And then there was two for two actual unofficial members at the moment. Which is a first, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a first that we've actually given the Order of the Oiramicad.
Although
on condition of becoming official.
It is on condition of completing the armor and becoming official. There's one for Talev from Jangalaya clan, and one for Nala from Vokchi clan. But they both worked their shebs off. They really did.
Yeah, from the sounds of it, they definitely did. That's fantastic. So congratulations to the three of them. Hopefully we'll see two of them finishing up and becoming official shortly.
Yeah.
No pressure there in the Abbey. Get that kit for Nala done, though.
No pressure at all. I was working on it today.
Excellent. How's that armored handbag coming along?
Oh, I've got some plans for that.
Cool. Any other awesome experiences that you'd like to share from Celebration Europe?
There are too many,
Just too many?
It was too many. I was utterly blown away by the whole event. I believe everybody was. The main thing was just how well we all bonded. And the last night was just, we could have drowned in tears. It was all hugs and kisses and tears. And it was awesome! To use the phrase from the con.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how every celebration goes. Is it's such a good time and then ends far too soon.
Sadly, the PTCES has been kicking in.
Yeah, I think I got a little bit of that too, given that my head was floating around over there. So that just means that the next time Celebration Europe rolls around, we got to get more mercs out there.
Definitely.
I certainly don't want to miss the next one.
No, we're the rumors are already beginning. The theories of where it's going to be based.
Ooh. Well, you'll have to keep us all posted then.
Well, personally, I'm hoping for Paris. Because it'll be a little bit closer than Germany.
Yeah.
I doubt it's going to come back to the UK anytime soon.
You never know.
our biggest bit guesser for Paris is because of Disneyland Paris.
Right, that's a good point.
And they have a massive conference centre there.
That sounds highly likely then.
It does.
Well, cool. Thanks so much for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome!
Glad to have you. Thanks so much.
Well, that is about all we have for this month's edition of Kel Dobby Talk Radio. Again, I'd like to thank Niabi and Zugte for guesting with us. See you next month.
Kel Dobby, Kel Dobby.
You want...
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.